And a very good afternoon. We are back. Yes, I did warn you that there might be some disruption to our live streaming because of essential technical upgrades going on here in the studio at Vectis Radio in advance of our going FM in, about 19 days, less than 19 days' time now. So I did warn you there may be a break in broadcasting. And as I warned you, it's not your end, it's ours. As some essential technical upgrades were happening here, not least of which were herding the new batch of hamsters into the wheel, because obviously we need greater power to generate for FM, so that's what we've been doing here. But we are back now. It's coming up to a quarter past midday. We're going to be with you through until 1 o'clock with today's The Monday's LSD. And I say we because I'm delighted to say joined in the studio again by the young man who has been chatting to me during the course of this morning. It's Isaac. Isaac Poynter-Chard. Good afternoon, Isaac.
Good afternoon to you.
Great to have you back on board, and welcome to this. You have taken all of this, I have to say, wonderfully in your stride since you've been here, and this is something you've never done before, is it?
Yeah, I've never done anything like this.
Well, you're coping admirably, I have to say. Well done, you. So you're joining us on work experience here at Vectis Radio for a couple of days. You only came into the outside offices about a couple of hours ago. You've been doing some research, some work on the four-piece course, and looking at some of the interesting topics that have been circulating around the news, local, national, and international, while you've been out in the offices there, and you've been in and had a couple of spots with me actually live on air, and you've managed it extremely well, I have to say, so congrats on that.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you for joining us. So really thrown in a bit at the deep end here, but no need to be at all afeard. We will have a natter about various topics that I know that you've been looking at and thinking about over the remaining 45 minutes of this, the Monday LSD. And we were going to start because just coming out of the weather update a little earlier at the top of this hour, with the ex-hurricane Ophelia currently now impacting southwest England and southern Ireland as it sweeps on its track. I think we may have dodged the bullet to some extent here on the Isle of Wight. The winds, as I mentioned in the weather update, will be significantly stronger this afternoon. There may be some travel disruption. We'll try and keep an eye on that for you, but I think we're going to miss the main event, as it were, so hopefully we'll stay safe. But you've been looking at 30 years ago. It's an extraordinary coincidence, isn't it? Because the great storm, as it is, as it's come to be known, of 1987, on this day in 1987, when we woke up to, when I woke up, you're far too young, you weren't even born then, but when we, the remainder of us of a certain age, woke up to horrendous devastation right across the south of England, it really was extraordinary. So looking back on it without having first-hand experience, clearly because of your youthful age, Isaac, but what was your impression looking back at the reports of the great storm?
Well, one of the first things I discovered immediately was the amount of damage that was actually done. It was quite a bit. It was £1 billion pounds
in total to property, I believe, and so on. It was extraordinary.
It was kind of shocking. Yeah. And I was going through some certain websites, and I found a lot of pictures, and it actually shows like big trees being ripped out, and there was holes in the ground. Mm. Cars have been crushed.
I mean, there were woodland areas, forest areas, indeed, across the south of England, the south coast, and in Sussex and Hampshire, and indeed on the island. But some really extensive forest areas that were just basically completely flattened. Just flattened. I mean, there wasn't a tree standing. And that, I think, for me, is the abiding image of the aftermath of that great storm. It really was quite extraordinary. I have vague memories of it in terms of some of the things, but I was in London at the time, and I guess, you know, not being exposed on the south coast and in the countryside so much, I don't think we really knew quite how serious it was in London until the next day.
Yeah.
But as I say, because you weren't there then, obviously not, but it was a massive storm, the biggest storm for, I think, 300 years, they decided after the event when they looked at all the detail on it. And, of course, the famous or perhaps infamous Michael Fish, the weather forecaster, which I know you looked at his weather forecast on that. Yeah. What was your impression of that?
My impression is, basically, I feel like a lot of people attack him because he's the weatherman,
yeah,
and he's supposed to tell us what is going to happen with the weather.
Yeah.
And but what you've got to remember is he's just there to tell us. He's not the one that's actually getting the information.
No, absolutely.
So when people lash out at him, they shouldn't be lashing out at him. They should be lashing out, like, the researchers.
Well, I think that's a very fair and balanced point, and I do take that. I think that it always amuses me, even to this day, when you see television weather broadcasters, and they're always asked by the person that links to them, the presenter of the news or whatever it happens to be, where the weather update is being broadcast, they always seem to hold them personally responsible. Can you bring us some sunshine? Are you going to give us a nice weekend? You know, it's not really, it's silly, isn't it?
I think I can't remember one of the websites I looked on, they actually quoted him.
Yeah.
And I feel like just then you're blaming him for that specific problem, but you can't blame him. He's getting the information from somebody else.
Absolutely right. I mean, I think if I remember rightly, and you've done far more recent and in-depth research on this this morning, so I'm only working from a very vague memory, but I recall something along the lines, and I'm not quoting Michael Fish verbatim, but when he was live, I remember seeing the weather broadcast. I think it was the 6 o'clock news in the evening on the BBC, and he said he'd had a phone call from a lady in somewhere, I forget where, down in the south of England, southwest somewhere, I believe, saying that she'd heard there was a hurricane on the way, and he said, "Don't worry, there isn't." And those are the words that came back to haunt him and have done for 30 years. And as you rightly point out, you know, the poor guy has taken such a hammering on that. He really has. But in fact, in his defence, and looking at it in a bit more depth again, which I know you have, he was indeed technically correct, because a hurricane is a tropical storm. It forms in the tropics and is derived from that region of the world, of the planet. A hurricane is no longer a hurricane when it leaves the tropics. We are obviously not in a tropical nation in our global location here in the United Kingdom. So it wasn't a hurricane, which is why they've been very specific, I think, in the current daily news today and the lead up to it, that it is ex-hurricane Ophelia they're talking about, downgraded to a tropical storm and now a post-tropical storm. But it wasn't actually a hurricane, and while the Beaufort wind scale, I'm sure you're familiar with it in terms of the wind strength, when we talk about the wind strength being just a light breeze or a strong breeze or a gale or whatever, and it has different numbers ascribed to it, and the wind strength tells you what the Beaufort scale is, and there is a hurricane strength on that scale. And yes, of course, some of the winds were over 100 miles an hour, which made them hurricane force, but it wasn't actually a hurricane. Now, that might be splitting hairs a little bit, but I'm trying to defend Michael Fish for all I'm worth here. Yeah. But the poor guy has come in for it over the years. He really, really has. But we do, as I mentioned earlier, we wish everyone, because being online, of course, we have people scattered right across the world listening. So a very good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night to you, whatever your time zone, wherever you are. That should cover most of you. But particularly anyone listening out there in Ireland, which is just about facing the brunt of this ex-hurricane Ophelia as it makes landfall as we speak. So I do hope everyone stays safe and indeed listens to their local news broadcasts that keep them up to date with what's happening. But the great storm, so extraordinary that it should be 30 years to the day that it struck last time. It's amazing, isn't it?
It's something I don't remember because I wasn't born at that time, but this is like the first time I've ever really heard about it.
Really?
Yeah, I've never really actually ever heard of really the Great Storm. I mean, I've heard like people say, oh yeah, like the Great Storm and stuff, but this is the first time I've ever really like looked into it, and I didn't realise how much damage was actually done. Like,
there were, of course, a number of tragic deaths involved as a direct result of the storm. I think your research has shown up the numbers.
I think it was 18.
Right, so you know, a significant number of tragedies, unfortunately, as a direct result of that storm. It really was quite extraordinary. I mean, because it's an anniversary today, and because of ex-Hurricane Ophelia, I'm sure that you will see on local and national news this evening, if you watch that, that there will be footage from 1987, from the Great Storm. I mean, there were huge ships, great cross-channel ferries washed up on beaches. There were forests completely flattened, roofs of really substantial buildings taken off. The sort of things that I suppose over the years we've become slightly more used to seeing, as it were, in terms of the 24/7 news coverage we get these days on television in particular, with the rolling news. And we are used to seeing live footage of hurricanes and storms in the tropics and the Caribbean and, unfortunately, various other places across the world. And you see these conditions, but those were the conditions that we actually had here in the United Kingdom along the south of the country. And to think of that, as you say, and I was there, you, as you say, weren't, and you weren't really aware of it, but it was like watching footage from the Caribbean.
Yeah, you don't expect it to happen when you are, especially in England.
Exactly. Now, that actually brings me on to a question, because we don't rehearse anything in the way of the lunchtime social debate, as you can clearly tell. It just sort of meanders along. And me being me, those of you who've listened to me presenting the lunchtime social debate on a Monday and Friday with various co-presenters over the years will know that I have this ridiculous butterfly mind, and I do apologise in advance, because I do tend to shoot off at tangents for a bit of a butterfly mind. But going on from that, what's your view in terms of the number of storms, even perhaps in your relatively short lifetime, not affecting necessarily the UK in particular, but the world in general in various areas? Do you think that global warming has any part in this?
Of course. Global warming is a big part of this world at the moment.
You think?
I believe it has. I don't know specifically how, but I believe it does have an involvement in the storms. Mm. When my family went to Florida on holiday, mm-hmm. We were driving along the road and it started lightly raining, and I think about 5 minutes later, the water was over the top of the SUV's wheels.
Really?
It was really bad.
Torrential, yeah.
Yeah, we went into a...
Quite scary as well, I
Yeah, imagine. For a little kid. Mm. We went to a hurricane-proof... hotel, mm-hmm. but sadly down the road there were 6 deaths in a sort of shopping mall from flooding and drowning.
Well, the thing is that the rate of downpour, if you like, in terms of precipitation, as you're describing, which is extraordinary in a matter of minutes, and the flash flooding that can occur, you just don't have time to prepare
We've seen it in the country ourselves, like in the north, just yes. How quickly it can happen.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, we have had that in this country. You're quite right. I mean, it's the speed, isn't it? That's the frightening element of it. I mean, as you're saying, a matter of minutes, and an SUV, which is not a small vehicle, particularly in America, and, you know, then it's, 18 inches high or 2 foot high over the wheels. I mean, in a matter of minutes.
It's ridiculous.
The amount of rain that those storms can produce. Yeah. And then, of course, we see in other parts of the world where, as a result of deforestation or just the topography of the land, you get the mudslides and just wipe out whole communities. So you're very much of the opinion that global warming is a culprit, shall we say?
100%.
Really? 100%. Do you consider it the main culprit? I mean, the main component, the main factor?
Maybe not the main culprit, but I definitely think, if you look back, maybe, we haven't seen these many storms, like, so close together in time than we have a long time ago. Mm. And...
this summer has been extraordinary in the Caribbean, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you're a movie fan, but a matter of a few weeks ago, when there were those three category 3, 4, or 5 hurricanes, all pictured from the satellite in a row, three hurricane systems pictured from a satellite in a row, and that instantly reminded me of, and I don't know if it's a film we're familiar with, The Day After Tomorrow.
I have seen that.
You know that? And there was an image in that with, I mean, obviously it was, they were supercells.
Yeah.
But there were 3 supercells, and immediately I thought, that's, you know, it's life imitating art.
It's something that we don't expect to see, like massive tsunamis and earthquakes in this country, but we've got numbers over in other places in the world. It's very, like it happens all the time.
All the time, and increasingly so, as you say. So your impression is very much that the extreme weather that we're talking about here is becoming less extreme. It's becoming more normal.
Normal. People are living in areas where they know there's, like, Florida. Mm-hmm. They have Hurricane Alley there.
Yeah.
It's bad. But people have made their homes there. They can't leave because everything they have is there.
Absolutely.
Where else? Like, in Thailand and Indonesia and stuff like that, they have typhoons, I think they call
exactly.
them.
Yeah, exactly.
And they can't leave because that's where their homes are. That's where their places are.
And in a matter of, as you've said, in an extraordinary short period of time, in a matter of minutes sometimes, people's entire livelihoods, and I hate to say it, but tragically sometimes their families as well, but, you know, their entire, as you say, their business, their livelihood, all their possessions, their home is gone. And for a lot of the... areas that you're mentioning there, I mean, Florida is a hugely wealthy area, it would have to be said.
Massively wealthy.
But the effects can be exactly the same.
Yeah.
And in other parts of the world that one might call less well off, the effects are still exactly the same. The entire families' livelihoods and homes are just simply wiped away in a matter of minutes or seconds.
We had recently the Texas flash flooding.
Yeah.
And that could be compared to somewhere up north. Mm. Just all of a sudden it just happens. Mm. Just water everywhere.
Okay, so I think we're fairly well established in terms of your opinion on this, that global warming is a significant factor, it would be fair to say, I think you're suggesting. What, as a young man with, you know, the greater majority of your life ahead of you, I mean, us, when I say us, I mean people of my generation, you know, we are leaving behind a legacy in terms of not just during my lifetime, and I'm not claiming personal responsibility for it, but, you know, what we have done to the world in terms of our generation and obviously preceding generations, we're leaving the younger generations, yourself and, you know, eventually I hope your children and their children and so on, we're leaving you with this mess. What could we or should we have done? And perhaps more importantly, what do you think your generation should be doing to try and counter this trend towards extreme weather, which we've just discussed?
Well,
do you have any thoughts on how we can counter this trend?
The problem is we are so far into it. Like, we're already in the problem.
Do you think it's unstoppable?
I think it's unstoppable, to be quite honest.
So how are we going to deal with it? I mean, you're going to be the sort of people... I mean, if you your dreamt ambition, which we support and wish you the best of luck with, going into the armed services, perhaps into the army, the army's role, increasingly, is not so much fighting wars, if I can put it that way. Or obviously, there are a lot of armed troops in conflict zones. I'm not disputing that. But a lot of the work that the armed forces do these days is in emergency relief and attending areas of the world in order to support local people in these dreadful circumstances that the climate has brought about. So you could find yourself in the front line dealing with these sort of things if that's the career you end up following. So you will actually be dealing with the aftermath of this yourself, you know, at the sharp end. So what do you think that your generation, are they sufficiently motivated to say, look, you know, we've got to do something about it, or do you think it's too late and we've just got to make provisions to protect ourselves as much as we
have,
can?
I think the second option, definitely. We need to find, we have the greatest amount of technology. We're in the 21st century.
Sure.
We know what we can do. We could definitely find a way to build ourselves around it, like hurricane-proof hotels. These are hotels. A long time ago, we were talking about bunkers that we called hurricane-proof, but now we're talking about hotels. So I think it's only going to be a matter of time until we find a way to live around this.
So we're going to have to coexist with this extreme weather, and we need to plan to do that. That's your view. That's an interesting one, because you feel that I'm kind of paraphrasing what you're saying. So correct me, please, if I'm not getting it right. But we've reached, or maybe have already passed, a kind of tipping point in terms of the point of no return, in terms of trying to redress the planet's balance meteorologically or climatically. You think that there's no going back? We've just got to live with it.
I don't think there's no going back. Basically, we're too far gone. We need to. We can slow it down, definitely.
By doing what?
Cutting carbon emissions. Electric cars.
Yep.
Here's the problem, though. Everybody says electric cars are the thing, but you have to build the electric car. That's the problem.
Yeah, so the carbon output is from the manufacturing of the... I see that's a bit of an anomaly. Sorry. So there are... You think that it would be... I mean, would you, when you start to drive, would you, for example, as someone from your generation, say... Well, we know, for example, that the government is going to be stopping the sale of petrol and diesel cars in, well, 12 or 13 years' time, I think, isn't it? So, you know, by the time that you're driving and got your licence and buying a car, you may only be able to buy an electric car.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I think electric is the way.
Yeah.
I mean, if there was, say... a massive power outcut, or have you ever heard of a solar flare?
Yes.
If there was something like that, I mean, we wouldn't be able to go anywhere, but we'd still find, like, if it means I got to walk to work or walk to my job, it's fine. But we need to definitely find a way.
Do you think that there needs to be more legislation? Do you think people are inclined? I mean, you're obviously a very intelligent, well-read young man with your finger on the pulse of what's going on in the world around you, both locally but, you know, globally as well. And you have formed these opinions in terms of where we are and where we're likely to be. Do you think that we can trust individuals like yourself to make the right decisions, or do you think that government has to actually pass laws to legislate to stop this, or to only allow that, or to channel all these green projects Do they have to legislate for that, or do you think people should be able to do it of their own volition, is what I'm asking?
Government definitely needs to
really
work with us.
You don't think we can trust humanity to do the best thing?
Basically, people are too lazy. I'm just going to... I think if we didn't have, like, green bins and wheelie bins, mm-hmm. there'd be more rubbish on the streets.
Sure.
So, yeah, definitely the government needs to look into this and, like, put laws in place.
I mean, do you think, moving on from that then, do you think, and as I say, you have to stick with me because I do tend to fly off at a tangent, but in that case, without getting into a political discussion here, but do you think that either the main existing parties, or indeed obviously the Green Party, which is increasing in its membership and its sway that it's holding, do you think that we need a greener government, you know, someone in power who is more greenly tuned, shall I say?
This is the thing.
Mm.
I have nothing against anybody. Like, it's my opinion. Mm. There's certain things that we need to keep, and there's certain things we need to take away. Mm. For instance, things we need to keep, maybe Trident.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a big one.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because it does bring into sharp focus you being a young man with his heart set on going into the army and serving his country through the armed forces. That obviously has a component in terms of defence of our country.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have well-reasoned and well-researched and heartfelt beliefs in terms of the global, the state of the planet, in terms of its viability. And those, do you find there's any form of conflict between those for you?
So a lot of people say, like, nuclear weapons and stuff like that, it's very bad for us.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my one counter to that.
Okay, yeah.
Nuclear weapons has given our country a voice.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we didn't have nuclear weapons, it would come down to the mass and size of your armies.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who do the biggest masses is America, China, and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd have to listen to them. But because we also have this little, like, thing that can just help us out, it's given us a voice. It's allowed us to give our opinion. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that we need them. We don't, because they're bad. But what I'm trying to say is we do need them to help us. We don't have to use them, but they're there.
So you're clearly talking about a nuclear deterrent.
Yeah.
But that without the United Kingdom having a nuclear deterrent, we wouldn't have a voice in the world in terms of, hopefully, the voice of reason.
We'd have a voice, but we just have a smaller voice.
Mm.
But we have a bigger voice because of these.
Now, you see, that is fascinating, and I'm really interested in you, the way you've very well explained, I have to say, with great clarity, and I think you've done that extraordinarily well. Let me then draw you into another component of that if you extend that argument to other countries around the world in terms of their having a nuclear deterrent, and those countries that are currently not nuclear countries but wish to develop a nuclear deterrent,
yes,
for the reasons that you have described that you consider to be important for the United Kingdom, which I think there are perhaps people that would agree or disagree with your point on that, but nevertheless you've made the point quite cogently and clearly that you believe that it gives the United Kingdom it puts us on a level playing field at the top table, if you will, in terms of global affairs.
Mm.
But those countries, and particularly, obviously, one would reference what are called rogue nations, and here we're talking about places like Iran or North Korea and so on. North Korea particularly, I suppose, because that's so topical at the moment.
See, North Korea is a sensitive area.
Yeah.
Because we don't really know a lot about that place.
Sure.
It's with other countries, we can tell... We can send people to find out what they have and how much of it they have, and like. But with North Korea, we're not allowed in there. We're not allowed to know what they. I don't understand. I'm just because I'm a younger generation. Maybe I understand. Maybe they have different views, but they need to understand that if they were just to relax their policies, the world would be so much better. I understand that they've got a bit of a madman at control,
mm-hmm.
but. You know,
but if they, I mean, I often find myself in position with the LSD that I play what I call devil's advocate, where I will try and be deliberately sort of controversial, not personally to you, but to throw a spanner in the works, because there may be people listening. And incidentally, if you've got a view on this, anything that we're talking about, by all means, do phone in on 01983 240 666, 240 666, the studio number. But I try to imagine the sort of opposing arguments or questions that other listeners who maybe don't feel obliged to put their own voice to those opinions, but we're saying, oh yes, but what about? I mean, if North Korea feels threatened, particularly in the current topical scenes where the United States, under the leadership of Donald Trump, are threatening quite clearly and quite categorically all sorts of the end of the world for North Korea. Do they have a legitimate claim to say, well, we need to maintain our nuclear deterrent because we are being threatened by more powerful and bigger nations?
What I'm trying to say is you can have a nuclear weapon.
Mm.
So it's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it.
Okay.
But you, like in the state of America, you don't need so many weapons that you can nuke every single country three times over. That's just ridiculous. That's like you're saying you're a bit hungry but ordering a full course buffet.
Mm.
It's silly. You don't.
I mean, back in my day, when I was your age, when I was the age you are now, we lived during the time of what was called the Cold War. I'm sure you've heard of it, where yes. Russia and America were at each other's throats, and it was a very dangerous time. Mm-hmm. And nuclear weapons had been developed, of course, as you will be aware from your history, yeah. And used to speed, hopefully, as we now say, the end of World War II. And that dreadful tragedy where they were used in Japan. But nuclear weapons held by Russia, the USSR as it was then, mm-hmm. and the United States of America, huge numbers of intercontinental ballistic missiles. And we lived in the shadow of the bomb, as we called it, yeah. as someone your age, as a young teenager. We lived with the constant fear. The news was all about that. I mean, there was the Cuban Missile Crisis, which you may not be familiar with, may have heard of.
Pigs of...
Bay of Pigs, Bay. That's right.
It's.
I mean, we were brought up under the shadow of the bomb, and there used to be information film, clips on television, government information film, sort of 2.5 minute long, showing what to do in the event of a nuclear attack.
Here's the thing, what you're describing right now is what, in the state of the whole North Korea, America, is what Japan is.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't heard, Japan is having weapons launched over their country.
Yeah, yeah.
And mm-hmm. they're building bunkers, they're doing exactly what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they're being caught in the crossfire, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not good, it's just...
But the idea of a deterrent, and you made it very clearly and absolutely nailed it when you were saying that better to have it and not use it than to need it and not have it.
Yeah.
And that is the argument behind nuclear deterrence, and that, in a nutshell, is the argument behind nuclear deterrence. But there is no escaping the fact that were nuclear warheads to be used by someone... a rogue nation, I'm going to say, and there are some rogue nations that wouldn't like to be called that. I would suggest that you could even include the United States in that at the moment.
Here's the thing.
If they were used, and then the counterattack, then it all kicks off, and, then it's the end of civilization, isn't it, basically?
See, the thing with Donald Trump is, what I see in my eyes is, he's kind of that bully that likes to push people, but when somebody pushes back or somebody threatens back, he sort of gets all sensitive and he starts bringing his sort of mates in. And in this case, his mates is the nuclear weapons. And I'm not going to say he's evil, because he's not evil. He's probably a nice guy, maybe. But it's just...
I mean, do you, just as a final point on this, we're going to take a break in a moment, but just as a final point, do you... Now, as a young man in this country, being aware of everything going on in the world, do you expect there to be a nuclear conflict? Yes or no?
I'm not sure.
Not sure. That's fair enough. No, I put you on the spot there, Isaac, but that's a reasonable response. We're going to take a short break now. This is the Monday Mid-Morning Show with the Lunchtime Social Debate. We'll be back after these.
This show is sponsored by God's Providence House. Find us at St. Thomas's Square, Newport, for great homemade meals, cream teas and cakes. We are open 9 to 5 all the year round. Find us on Facebook or call us on 522 085.
This is Vectis Radio.
For the people, by the people.
Island Harbour presents The Breeze Restaurant and Bar. We offer a variety of delicious foods which can be enjoyed inside the recently refurbished restaurant or outside, overlooking the picturesque marina. Start your day well with something from our breakfast menu. Enjoy afternoon tea with a slice of freshly made cake or drop by for an evening meal with the family. We offer a range of tasty British classics with a choice of daily specials. Our produce is locally sourced to ensure quality and taste. The Breeze Restaurant and Bar. one of the Solent's best kept secrets. Call us today on 533-388.
If you're looking for something unusual or very unique, visit the silver screen at the new Rembrandt Gallery in Scarrett's Lane, Newport. We have fully authenticated autographs from the world of film, music and more, some of which are very rare, including Elvis Presley, Marilyn Monroe, Humphrey Bogart and even a Buzz Aldrin. All of the pieces are professionally framed and beautifully presented, and they come with a certificate of authentication endorsed by AFTEL. We also have original cinema posters, vintage prints and lots of other interesting items, all available. Come and visit us in person at the new Rembrandt Gallery, 15 Scarrett's Lane, Newport, or call 01983 529 285 or visit the new Rembrandt Gallery on Facebook.
Have you suffered bullying and or abuse, whether in the workplace or in the domestic environment? Are you struggling to believe in yourself? Break the Cycles free Mind the Gap course will help you to rebuild your self-worth and begin to move you forward positively in your life. To find out more, call 01983 754666 or email hello@breakthecycle.org.uk.
You don't own me. I'm not just one of your many toys.
Hi, it's James here from James and Judy's Wednesday Afternoon Show. We're the husband and wife team who find out what great events are coming up on the Isle of Wight and then squabble about them. Judy and I are really keen that Vectis Radio does its part for the community here on the island, so we also host special one-hour shows for the Earl Mountbatten Hospice, Visit Isle of Wight, the LGBTQ community and the Isle of Wight College. Join us on Wednesday afternoons 1 to 4 for great music and local events, and check out the Community Shows tab on the Vectis Radio homepage.
Stay social and get in touch.
It's at Vectis Radio on Twitter.
The World Wide Web never felt so local.
This show is sponsored by God's Providence House. Find us at St Thomas's Square, Newport for great homemade meals, cream teas and cakes. We are open 9 to 5 all the year round. Find us on Facebook or call us on 522085.
And we're back. It's 1:15 on this Monday afternoon. You're listening to the last section of the Monday mid-morning show, what we call the LSD, the Lunchtime Social Debate, with me, Andy Knight. And in the studio with me, delighted to say, a young man from the island, born and bred here on the island, lives in Cowes, goes to Cowes College, Enterprise College, and is with us here at Vectis Radio for 2 days doing some work experience and working on the four-piece course, and has been, basically thrown in at the deep end. We had a couple of brief chats earlier on the show, but he's been thrown right in at the deep end with me. It's Isaac Poynter-Chard, who's here on the Lunchtime Social Debate. Isaac, very good afternoon again.
Good afternoon to you.
And just before we go any further, I have to say that I'm extremely very impressed. I mean, I have any number of co-hosts that have been through the studio with me, old, young, male, female, sensible, daft, whatever. Many of the students that we have in, always a delight to meet them, the young people, because they are the future, without being too corny about it. I mean, they simply are. I have to say that you have just stepped into some fairly unknown territory, and you're dealing with it in an extraordinary, accomplished way. So thank you. No, I'd like to give you a big up on that one. Anyway, so we've had a long chat about this, that and the other. We've got one more section to go now. Slightly curtailed Lunchtime Social Debate this Monday, because as I mentioned at the top of the show, there are some essential technical upgrades going on here at Vectis Radio in advance of us going to FM, staying on online on the internet as well. So fear not, wherever you are across the world, we will still be broadcasting you, as indeed we do now, 24/7 on the internet. But we are going FM across the island, and that requires quite a lot of technical input, and all the guys are working very hard to get everything tested and up and running in time for the launch date, which is November the 4th on 104.6. So a slightly reduced hour of the Lunchtime Social Debate. We've got one more section that we're into now, Isaac, something else that you had been investigating and researching that you wanted to bring up with me. What was that?
It's the whole thing in Spain with Catalonia.
Okay. Yes, so Catalonia and the attempt to hive off Catalonia as an independent region. What do you make of that?
I mean, if the people in that specific area, if they want to claim independence, if they want to be their own country, That's perfectly fine. They should be able to go ahead and do it.
Okay, so now if we extend that that concept of independence for a region that has, as I understand it, and I think that you're far more up to speed on this than I, because I know you've been looking at it quite closely, but it is a region that wants self-governance, clearly. Yeah. It is a region that is recognised as a different part of Spain.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm looking for here, I suppose, are parallels with other areas of the world. Let's take the United Kingdom just out of England, in terms of England, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. Now, yeah. The Irish question, as it's being called, has been running for, you know, well, 100, 200 years,
yeah.
In terms of an issue. Devolvement of governments and assemblies to Wales and Scotland has been very much obviously in the news with referendums and so on, or referenda, the plural, I suppose I should say,
yeah.
And so on and so forth. You could even perhaps extend the parallel to Europe, where there have been these arguments for many, many decades now about Europe becoming a United States of Europe, almost like the United States of America,
yeah.
Of which we chose and voted in the early 70s to become a member state.
Yeah.
But, of course, we have now voted otherwise and are now choosing to remove ourselves, Brexit, obviously,
yeah, of course,
from that European community. Do you think that the world is becoming more or less global in terms of individual states or regions or peoples wanting to identify and establish their own nations through their own government and self-regulation? Does it seem to be a trend to you where people should... Because I was interested in you saying that, in your view, that the Catalonians have a legitimate case. Is there any reason that you think that in particular?
We're coming out of this old sort of... Like, a long time ago, I guess, maybe I would have said it differently, but because I basically feel like people should be able to express themselves. And if the people of Catalonia want to be able to express themselves and break away, if they feel like they don't belong there, they should happily be able to leave. Say, if you're in another country and the whole one half of a country speaks another language to the other country, you should be able to split in half.
So... What sort of delineators would you suggest are valid in that case when you're talking about a separate part of a country? And it's difficult because I've got different models in my mind here, trying to not confuse the two. I mean, I'm sure the Catalonian issue is in no way parallel to the United Kingdom in terms of Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland and England, of course.
Yeah, of course.
But is difference... enough to justify being separate, or should difference be celebrated as part of a larger whole, I suppose is what I'm saying? Or is it the question, do you think nationalism, the identity that a people have, overrides every other consideration? I'm not sure whether that's the case or not.
I guess you could say, yeah, difference is something like a country should celebrate. Because, the country doesn't want to be like, oh, yeah, we're all exactly the same. You want to celebrate that, the different cultures and the different languages.
So diversity, diversity is a much used word these days,
yeah.
In terms of sexual orientation, in terms of different countries.
Race
and colour. Emigration and the immigrant question and so on. So diversity is celebrated, just this summer, not shooting off onto a different topic, but we had the first Isle of Wight Pride here.
Yeah.
And diversity was celebrated brilliantly. But diversity seems to be the word of the day, almost.
Yeah.
But is diversity necessarily the same, and is it best served by separating out, or is it best served by integrating in? Into a bigger mix? Do you think that identity gets lost if it's diluted in a bigger area, perhaps?
I think diversity it's definitely celebrated. So if the people of Catalonia stayed with Spain, they'd still be, like, warmed, welcomed by the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just diversity. Mm. It's also the fact that they have, like, different political values, different sort of ways they want to run things. And... that's like something you just can't ignore because they want to be... It's such a different place. Like, it's almost like when you walk into that certain area, it's almost like you're already in a different country.
Okay, yeah, fair point.
Yeah. It'd be hard to, like, just, like, sort of sort of show it in a different area, but it's sort of...
I mean, there's a strong argument, and I'll go back to something a little bit lighthearted. Forgive me for this, because you're making some extremely important and very well-made points there, but back in the late 60s, there was a folk artist here on the island, Laurie Say. Many of you of my age will know or remember, dear Laurie. His son, Mike Say, was my best mate at school when I was at Carisbrook, and he brought out an EP which you can still find here and there, but it is on YouTube, and it was about the time when the Commonwealth, obviously the Great Britain yeah. had around the world, and still has obviously the Commonwealth yeah, around the world, but Rhodesia, as it was back in the day, became independent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now, of course, Zimbabwe. But Ian Smith was the Prime Minister of Rhodesia and was declaring a unilateral declaration of independence from the United Kingdom, from the Commonwealth, as I recall. And Laurie Say wrote a fabulous song, which is still, I think, relevant today, called UDI for the IOW, where he was in a very light-hearted and obviously kind of almost sarcastic way saying that the Isle of Wight should declare independence. And which, you know, that going along with the sort of precepts of some of your points there, there's a strong argument for saying the Isle of Wight should be an independent country.
I mean, I don't think we want to. I think we're quite happy being. We have a flag. I know my sister.
Yes, we do. Yeah.
My sister at uni, she has the flag in her room.
Does she? Good for
yeah,
her.
Yeah, she does.
Good for her. But I mean, if you fragment. I mean, the point I'm making, and I did, you know, go off on a tangent there with the light-hearted sort of element. But
right.
You know, if you fragment, I wonder how much you can achieve. If you fragment for perfectly legitimate reasons, as you say, because of difference, but whether fragmenting countries diminishes something about that country's ability to embrace diversity and to serve all its people. I mean, there are two clearly different ends to this, aren't there?
Yeah, I guess you could call it an argument with Catalonia, is if that like section of diversity breaks off, you're going to have two sort of countries which are very, very similar.
Mm.
But if they stay together, you'd have one country that is mixed.
Mm.
So you could say the same with this country,
sure.
with Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland and England. It's a mixing pot.
Yes.
Of course, we have people coming from other countries, but it's a mixing pot of cultures.
Mm.
I mean, we're all the same country.
I suppose really what I'm asking you, as a young man, clearly with his head screwed on, who's aware of things going on around him locally and across the world, do you think globalisation is a good thing, I suppose? That may be a slightly different question, but, I mean, we are becoming a much... Because of the power of technology and communication and so on, we are becoming much more of a sort of global village, as it's often referred to, because we are so interlinked, whereas before technology didn't allow that in terms of either transport and travel or communications, whereas these days you can see, hear and speak to anyone anywhere in the world pretty much instantly. And so, you know, is globalisation a good thing?
I think globalisation is a great thing. We're getting lots of different cultures that are mixing. With that, we're getting new languages, new foods, new sort of ways of, like, treating each other.
Mm.
It's a really good thing. Very good.
So I think that if we just round this section off now, perhaps, Isaac, but can we agree then that we think that globalisation is perhaps inevitable and unstoppable, perhaps, but that it is... one should also, while embracing diversity, celebrate difference as well. Would that be fair?
That'd be fair to say,
In terms of national identity. I think that's a pretty tricky road to walk because, you know, nationalism can be a very dangerous animal, as history has taught us.
But, it would take a while. If we all want to come together and, like, coexist, it's going to take a while.
Sure.
Because not everybody likes the same thing and not everybody treats each other the same way.
Unfortunately, right.
Yeah.
But, well, we are coming towards the end of this, Isaac, but thank you very, very much indeed for joining me. And as I say, you really, on your first morning here at Affectus Radio, I don't know what you were expecting, but I doubt you were expecting this, but you were thrown in literally at the deep end. You have handled it brilliantly in a very mature manner. It's been a pleasure to meet you and
you.
To
I've
enjoy your
myself.
Company. Good. I'm very pleased to hear it. Don't forget that you and any of your family and friends can listen to this lunchtime social debate again here on Vectis Radio when it's replayed for you this evening at 10 o'clock tonight. So is there anyone, just briefly, as we come towards the end of the show, you'd like to give a shout-out to?
Yeah, I'd like to give a shout-out to my big sister, who's down in Plymouth.
Mm-hmm.
She's at her home away from home at uni. And I'd like to say I love her, and she's doing amazing.
Brilliant.
My mum, who's at work at the moment, who might be listening, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to say I'm thankful for everything she does.
Lovely.
And my dad, who's off to Thailand.
Wow.
Yeah. He's doing a course to become a chiropractor, like a Taiwanese masseuse.
Uh-huh.
And I'd like to say I love him as well.
Fantastic. And I guess to anyone else who knows you, any friends, college.
Shout out to all my friends in my college.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I think one of my teachers might be listening.
Oh, right. Yeah. Better give them a name check then.
Mrs. Stannard.
All right, Mrs. Stannard. There you go. A name check from Isaac Pointer-Child there. Isaac, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. The 1 o'clock news is now on the way. I will be back on Friday for the mid-morning show from 10 o'clock. Join me then if you can. After the 1 o'clock news, Jonathan Bacon's here. But bye-bye from us. Bye-bye.